Hello, welcome and thank you for joining us and listening to our podcast, The God Beyond the Bible. Our podcast is released weekly each Friday. The content of each episode is based on the questions and curiosities we all have about God and the Bible. Many of our topics are considered taboo in the minds of the mainstream church. You will find our discussions to be, I think, refreshing and often far from traditional. But we don't just skirt around these complex issues, but confront them head on, and not in the way you're used to hearing them discussed on typical Christian talk shows. I'm Alan Rowland, creator and host of The God Beyond the Bible. As of the launch of this podcast, I've been a pastor for more than 35 years. My co-host is my daughter, Trayson, and our engineer co-producer is my daughter, Tabitha. Our mission is to encourage our audience, along with us, to open our minds to the reality that God is simply too big to be fully explored or experienced by the reading and studying of a single ancient work. In short, the Bible's not the sum of God, and to think this is to limit what He has done, is doing, and what He will do in our future. So with introductions made, thank you for listening, and let's dive into the topic of the day.
And welcome, seekers, to episode number 122 of the podcast, God Beyond the Bible, the podcast made by seekers and for seekers. We're sending out thoughts of love and prayers to our friends out west who are experiencing one of the worst droughts, resulting in water shortages for many major cities. This is the 17th year of record low snow melt and rain. Lake Mead,
which is held by the Hoover Dam. Yeah, that's behind the Hoover Dam.
Lake Mead, which is a major source for drinking and irrigating water, is more than 140 feet below its normal level. That's the lowest it's been since it first began to fill. And lots of folks who are able are leaving Southern California, Nevada, and Arizona out of concern for the critical water shortage. We tend to take the all-important resource of clean water for granted sometimes, especially for those of us living in areas where it's abundant and easily accessible.
Yeah, where it rains a lot.
When we're in a place where we're going, please don't let it rain for a couple of days.
Yeah. I just talked to Joe out in Las Vegas. He said, you know, we've had some rain, but said our humidity has been for here. Yeah. Out there, terrible. But he said, you know, yeah, it's critical. It is so critical. I saw just a little piece yesterday that they're within 4 feet of having to start cutting these communities' usage.
Oh,
and I mean,
gosh.
Cut it from the pipeline. And that means
just you have what you
if
have.
If everybody uses it up, you'll do without till.
Oh, goodness.
So they're
gracious.
About to start metering and limiting how much can go. And of course, the farmers, and we probably don't realize how much of our food supply is grown in those desert regions.
A lot
desert
of people don't realize.
Irrigated.
But like our lettuce and a lot of our tomatoes come from out west because there's less of a bug problem out there.
I was amazed. Go sometime and see what the almond farms. I don't eat almonds. Maybe in a almond joy. I'm not a big almond eater, but I guess that's a big thing. But they said how many gallons of water it takes to produce 1 pound of almonds. It's unbelievable.
I can believe it because we like I said, we are blessed here in Arkansas with the amount of water that we get. But if you read online, it takes on our fruit trees that my husband and I grow on a pear tree, it takes 2 gallons of water per day equivalent to keep that tree going.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's here where we're getting rain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we're not arid.
Exactly.
Okay, we're ready for shout outs. So yeah. A little long intro there. We apologize for that. But we are thinking about you folks out
west. Yes, we are. Our shout outs this week are to our listeners in Dallas, Texas and New Martinsville, West Virginia. We are so glad to have you guys listening.
You bet. There's only one reason, this is the quote now. There's only one reason why you're not experiencing bliss at this very moment. And it's because you're thinking and focusing on the past and the future and the things you don't have. But right now, you have everything you need to be in bliss. And that's what, Anthony DeMello?
I like that.
Well, this week we're still revisiting some of our earliest podcast topics from the spring of 2019. You guys remember 2019?
Barely.
Yeah.
Before corona, before masks, before social distancing. It seems like so long ago that we enjoyed those carefree days of big crowds and carefree indoor events. But that's enough of that. Today we're going to talk about a topic from our 9th episode titled, Were Adam and Eve Alone on the Earth? And now that a couple of years has passed since we first discussed it, what's your short answer?
No.
Well, my short answer is, of course they weren't. No. They weren't alone. And we're going to pretty well lay down some. I mean, we go back and listen to that episode we did. In those early episodes, we did a whole bunch of, probably folks' eyes just glazed over from all of, because we tried to just document everything right. that we were saying. And now, so that's why we encourage you to go back and listen to that ninth episode.
So before we look for clues in the Bible text, let's just talk about the problems that we have with Adam and Eve being the first humans on Earth. The most difficult problem is that according to the genealogy kept by Jewish folks, Adam and Eve lived on the earth a mere 6,000 years ago. And while that is a long time ago, if they were the first humans ever, it doesn't agree with any of the archaeological discoveries that we've made concerning the evidence of how long man has been around. You know, bones, fossils, cave art, construction of ancient cities and communities, human remains found next to the remains of other animals that haven't existed on Earth for far more than a mere 6,000 years.
And let me go ahead and say, when I was steeped deep in the Christian culture, I just would ignore these things and say, well, it's all made up. They're all attacking God. They're yes. all attacking the Bible. See, I was a defender of the Bible. Mm-hmm. That Bible, remember? That book was sacred and holy, and right. they were attacking. And it was all a big conspiracy to attack. And I'm thinking, these people would probably say, what? We're just reporting what we're finding.
Right.
You know,
I dug this up in the back of my yard. Yeah, yeah.
Is it me?
It is.
Okay, not to mention human remains found that clearly date before the last ice age, which is dated to have been about 25,000 years ago, and actually may have ended just about 10,000 years ago. I'm just throwing that out there. To be honest, to think that mankind is a mere 6,000 years old is just not an acceptable theory anymore. There has pretty much been a paradigm shift concerning this, much as there was in the 16th century when the church was jailing and putting to death those who suggested that the earth revolved around the sun and not vice versa. Does anyone know if there are any numbers to tell us how many people have moved away from the 6,000-year-old earth theory compared to those who still hold that dogma? I mean, I don't know.
The best that I could find, Tabby may have found something a little better, was a poll that was done in 2014 from Live Science, and it estimates that around 4 in 10 Americans at that time in 2014 still believed in the young Earth theory.
Okay. So it has a title, the young mm-hmm. Earth theory. Okay.
The objections to Adam and Eve being the first humans and the Earth and human race only being 6,000 years old do not come only from the scientific community. The fact is, the text of the Bible does not specifically say that no one existed before or even at the same time as Adam and Eve. In fact, it clearly indicates otherwise. Let's talk about the end of chapter 1 of Genesis. As far as Genesis chapter 1 being the original and first creation, verse 11 states that the earth brought forth the trees and herbs whose seed was already in the earth. It reads, "And God said, let the earth bring forth grass, the herb yielding seed, and the fruit tree yielding fruit after its kind, whose seed is in itself upon the earth."
I mean, that's pretty.
And can we just, I'm going to say this. Is it not a little bit strange to anyone else that we perfectly accept that God is an all-powerful being who can create anything, and yet he had to create the earth in stages? Like, here's the rock, and now we'll put some grass yeah. on it. And now, I mean, honestly.
Yeah. Well, you're going back to where the earth was void and without form in that first chapter.
Well, I mean, and God said, let the earth bring forth grass and herb-yielding yeah. seed. I feel like when he first created the earth, it would have just kind of popped into existence with everything there.
But it seems like it was in the stage that conditions were met for mm-hmm. life, though. You know, it seemed like, you know, condition. But for the seed to already be there, there had to be life there before.
That's
right. Yes. So then as far as Adam and Eve being the first man and woman, we have the complication of the last few verses of Genesis chapter 1. In Genesis chapter 1, verse 27 to 31, it reads, "So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he them, male and female created he them. And God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and the fowl of the air and over every living thing that moves upon the earth. And God said, behold, I have given you every herb-bearing seed which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree in the which is the fruit of a tree yielding seed. So to you it shall be for meat. and to every beast of the earth, and to every fowl of the air, and to everything that creepeth upon the earth, wherein there is life, I have given every green herb for meat. And it was so. And God saw everything he had made, and behold, it was very good. And the evening and the morning were the sixth day.
And I want to point out two things I want to exemplify to, because we're going to talk about that. Replenish the earth. Told Adam, told the man, not Adam. And, you know, we always see jump to Adam.
Anytime you have that prefix re, yeah, it see, means yep, to do again.
Yeah, and it means to reap. And he said, replenish the earth. Mm-hmm. That's what the text reads. And it was all on the sixth day.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Okay, let's keep that. So let's talk about all the things one has to ignore for this to be Adam and Eve. Now, we're talking about the man and woman created, yes, he, them. And it wasn't created him, it was actually created they, them. Mm-hmm. But we'll talk about that. We've talked about that before. Let's talk about all the things one has to ignore for this to be Adam and Eve. First of all, these humans were clearly made and placed on the earth in one day. The text states it. When we read of Adam and Eve in chapter 2, it becomes clear that Adam was formed what seems to be quite a long time before Eve came on the scene. You know, he named all the animals and mm-hmm. all that stuff. In fact, when he was introduced to Eve, Adam basically says, "Finally, I have a mate like all of the other animals that I have spent all this time naming." And, of course, that's our implied translation.
Well, and the Bible says that, what, Adam was lonely and without a suitable mate. And I don't think that's going to happen in a few hours.
All in one day.
I mean,
well, maybe if you're really, really impatient and you're a really fast namer of animals. I mean, I'm not making fun. I'm just saying, look at the ridiculous things that we will do to defend an implied dogma.
Yes.
Well, and talking about the statement for the man and woman to replenish the earth, I mean, that's a clear statement that they're to repopulate it, indicating that there has been a population preceding them.
Yes. So this may have been a mass creation of many males and females. It says male and female created he them and then told them to replenish the earth. Genetically speaking, a single couple cannot repopulate a whole planet, or else the next generation would have to reproduce with almost identical genetic makeup, which, as we know, would result in a genetic deformity in many cases.
And why do we accept that fully now? You know, don't marry your cousin, don't. But then it was like, oh no, Adam and Eve, it all came from them.
The apologetics answer is that their DNA was so clean because they had never reproduced that it didn't matter for some 20 generations. And by then the DNA was so different it didn't matter anymore either.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
But the DNA wouldn't get different.
Exactly.
More evidence that this male and female creation, we're still talking about that of chapter 1, verse 27 of Genesis. More evidence that this male and female creation of chapter 1 is not Adam and Eve is that it is indicated that they are turned loose and spread out on the planet and given dominion over all living things. And in chapter 2, there is no indication that he gave Adam and Eve any such instruction. In fact, quite the opposite. They were confined to a specific geographic location we call the garden and are instructed to conform to a diet of fruit. He didn't mention anything about eating the herbs and fish and animals and all that stuff.
Well, and I thought it was interesting to Rob Bell, Tabby quoted him in one of our previous episodes that we did. He has this theory that he believes that the Bible is absolutely a history of Jewish people.
Of course.
And
it
he
is.
Said Adam and Eve were the start of the Jewish
sure.
religion.
Right.
But they weren't the start of all everything on earth.
In fact, in that 127, I'm going to go ahead and say it, and we probably mention it later in this, in that where it says male and female created he them. It didn't even say male and female. It says humanity.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. The Hebrew says humanity is a word that means humanity, not one man and one more. It means right. humanity.
Interesting.
Okay, so let's move on to Adam and Eve now. We are told in the text that they get evicted from the paradise of the garden and now must face the uncooperative and unpredictable task of surviving in nature, where everything is not as easy as picking fruit from a tree. They seem to have not had sexual contact in the garden because they don't have children until after their expulsion. They then have a son that they name Cain and another that they name Abel. Cain kills Abel and is sentenced to exile away from his family. Abel complains that his punishment is too great because if he is sent away from his family to this foreign land of Nod, they will kill him. Mm-hmm. And that's recorded in Genesis 4, verses 13 through 15.
And you know, we always been, for years, we've been hung up on that, where did Cain get his wife? But it's not about where did Cain get his wife. Who were they that were going to kill him?
That's my right. Yeah.
Who were they that he was afraid of? Because if he gets sent away from his family, as far as we know, nobody else had there been exiled. Be. Nobody right. else had been exiled right. from the family that come out of the garden. So who is it over there?
So Cain's claim that if you send me out there, they will kill me, really should make it pretty clear that there are others existing outside of Adam and Eve's family group, their offspring. We then read that Cain takes a wife in the land of Nod and produces offspring, and his offspring becomes the first to introduce music and metallurgy and domesticating of animals to the earth. Again, if we insist that only Adam and Eve's offspring exist, then we must insist that Cain married his paternal and maternal sister, and once again we have the problem of having to suspend the laws of genetics, which that is the unfounded claim that the defenders of the 6,000-year-old earth and Adam and Eve being the first and only humans claim, and they do. They say that before the flood, that the principles of genetics didn't apply.
Okay.
Yep, just take that one for what it's worth.
Another difference in the creation of the man and woman, or humanity, as the Hebrew text says, is that the identity of the creator seems to change. In fact, in the first chapter of Genesis, the Hebrew, and we did a couple of episodes on this, mm-hmm. the Hebrew Elohim is used, which is actually a plural, mm-hmm. gods, meaning more than one. In fact, our English Bible bears this out when it says, "Let us make man in our image." But still, our translators insist that Elohim, or gods, was intended to be used in the singular sense. Intended to be interpreted, they said. Right. They know it wasn't used in the singular uh-huh. sense. They said it was intended to be interpreted in the singular sense. Now, how could you make that claim? How could you make the claim? And they say, oh, it's because of the other text around it. But when you read, let us make man in our image.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to take you guys down a short rabbit hole. I mean.
And it says there in that verse, let me go ahead and say the first of that. It says, and the gods. Or, and God said, let us make man in our, but it actually said, and the gods said, let us make man in our image. That changes everything.
And would that not clear up the multiple times in the Bible when the Jews refer to themselves as God's inheritance?
Yeah.
And God refers to the Jews as his portion and his inheritance?
Yeah, but that's Jehovah.
Mm-hmm.
That's and not Elohim.
But it's like, not, but it is. It's Jehovah. It's El rather than yeah. the Elohim of the many.
Yeah.
But the idea and the concept of there being an Elohim would make this statement he makes several times, especially just like in yeah. Deuteronomy 32:9, for the Lord's portion and inheritance. I don't want to throw us off.
Is Tracing loud? Is Tracing, okay. It's just my headphones. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I apologize. I want to say something before we did this whole yes. recording. Okay.
But yeah, for the Lord's portion and his inheritance is his people in Deuteronomy. So the idea of Elohim and El would make that verse make a lot more sense. But you guys can listen to our episode on that.
But did you say it said the Lord's portion?
Uh-huh.
That was actually Jehovah.
I know.
Well, I think that's what she's saying yeah. is that he got a portion of,
yeah, of so it was, all there is. Of all there well, I can show is. You another so verse. I don't have it before me. I can show you another verse that said Jehovah's portion, the Lord's portion is this. But he also says, and then El or Elohim, my people, and he calls, it's like the Amorites, my people, the, mm-hmm. and he calls yes. them my people.
Right.
It's just, it's an interesting, you should yeah. go back and listen to our episode on
I didn't
Elohim,
mean to mess
guys.
You up on that. Are so, you 10?
Sure.
Yeah.
But if we are attentive, we see that the one who is forming Adam and Eve doesn't merely say God is our English Bible, God in our English Bible. It subtly shifts to using the Lord God, which in Hebrew is Jehovah Elohim, or if translated without bias, it would be translated as Jehovah of the gods. Most Bible students are trained to ignore these inconsistencies or are given the apologetics answer when faced with these difficult questions.
Now, let me explain what we're saying here, because I kind of messed Tracing up and threw her off there talking about the volume of her mic. Let's read chapter 1 mm-hmm. of Genesis in any translation, and it says God,
mm-hmm.
any English translation. then you go to chapter 2, and in about the third verse, it begins to say the Lord God. And this is where Adam and Eve come on the scene. And that's where it says Jehovah Elohim.
I have to wonder how much more evolved our Christian religion would be if we had met these things head on instead of just saying, oh, well, that doesn't matter.
We're going to put that under the rug. Ignore that.
Well, but you got to remember, what was the motivation behind condensing everything down to one way of thinking, and that back to our Roman Catholic heritage. Mm-hmm. All of us have a Roman Catholic heritage, whether we want to admit it or not.
Yes.
Call yourself Protestant if you want to. We're deeply steeped in Roman Catholic theology.
Right. Yes, we are.
Would it not explain a lot to make things much clearer and narrow the gap between the scientific discoveries and the Bible if we would just consider the fact that there were other people on the earth at the same time that Adam and Eve were introduced? And that this humanity that existed, now humanity in 127, Genesis 127, and this humanity that existed was genetically close enough to the Adamic race that Cain was able to produce children by these women of Nod.
It would certainly make things much simpler and more logical.
Well, it seems that the paradigm shift is well underway, and now in this free area, of this free age of free exchange of ideas and information, those who have controlled the spiritual minds of the masses for centuries are losing their audience for such narrow-minded interpretations of the Bible and the world that we live in. The reality is, all logic points to the existence of some form of humanity on Earth for not just thousands, but perhaps even millions of years. It is time for the primitive bonds of religion to be thrown off and for our spirituality to be removed from the oppression of the organized church and its dogmas and doctrines, and for us to allow for new ways of thinking of these age-old problems that organized religion has failed to adequately address.
Jesus came to set the people free of the bonds of religion that day. He introduced them to a way of approaching God that did not revolve around the demands of worshiping in a certain place, in a certain way, at a certain time. In fact, that very religion that dominated the masses collapsed completely in AD 70. But it didn't take but a few centuries for man to reestablish a new religion with all its fears and demands and new ways to control and extract riches from the people who participate in it. Just remember, seekers, religion dominates those who seek the divine through its methods and mandates. But true spirituality sets us free from these man-made requirements. The master said, "When I set you free, you will be free indeed."
And then Paul later said, "Why are you falling back into bondage again?"
Yes.
Why are you so, to the Galatians, why are you so quickly going back to bondage again? I've set you, you know, you've been set free. Mm-hmm. Okay. But until next time, may the divine's unconditional grace, peace, and love be in, on, and radiate out from each of you, our fellow seekers, from all of us here at God Beyond the Bible.
Did you enjoy listening to God Beyond the Bible? Do you have an idea for an episode? Connect with us today. Visit our website at godbeyondthebible.com, all one word, or send us an email at email@godbeyondthebible.com, or you can visit us on Facebook. Just type God Beyond the Bible into the search bar.